please call court tomorrow.
The court will now call Vonda Fox versus Paul Brown et al.
All right, Mr. Turner, are you ready?
The appellant's ready, Your Honor.
All right, we'll hear from you.
Yes, sir.
Good afternoon, Justices. My name is Randy Turner. I represent the appellant, Vonda Fox. Vonda Fox filed this lawsuit against government employees in their individual capacity, alleging that their negligence in licensing and continuing to license a daycare center resulted in the death of her son, Jacob Fox, a young boy. The state employees filed motions to dismiss under Section 101.106F of the Texas Tort Claims Act, which basically provides that if the suit could have been brought against the governmental unit, then a suit against the government employees must be dismissed. The trial court granted the motion to dismiss, and this appeal comes from that. Our position is, since Section 101.106, since the government is immune from liability, the granting of the motion to dismiss deprived Ms. Fox of her day in court, any ability to seek redress in the courts. Under the open courts provision of the Texas Constitution, a statute is unconstitutional in its application if it restricts a well-recognized common law cause of action, and the restriction is unreasonable when balanced against the state's purpose. Here, Vonda Fox filed a negligence cause of action against the employees. Now, the Franca versus Velasquez case was handed down by the Texas Supreme Court after the trial court entered the judgment in this case, but in Franca, the court said that, and I'm quoting, public employees have always been individually liable for their own torts, and Texas law has always allowed suit to be brought against a government employee in his individual capacity. The appellee claims in this case, or the appellees claim that this lawsuit was filed under the Texas Tort Claims Act, and therefore it's not a common law cause of action, but rather a statutory cause of action. But our position is that the Tort Claims Act is not a cause of action. It simply waives immunity for causes of action to be brought. In other words, there are no elements to a cause of action brought under the Tort Claims Act. It's not itself a cause of action. Secondly, the restriction on Fox's ability to file suit is unreasonable in this case when balanced against the purpose of the statute. The stated purpose of 101.106 was to make plaintiffs make an election of remedies. You can either sue the government or you can sue the state employee. When the suit against the government when the government is immune from suit, and when the lawsuit against the employee must be dismissed because it could have been brought against the government, even though the government is immune, there is no election. I mean, this totally leaves Mrs. Fox, whose little boy was killed, without any remedy to go to court. She's not allowed to sue the government. She's not allowed to sue the employee. I mean, that's it. There's no, the courthouse doors are closed. In this case, the appellee argues that Mrs. Fox waived her open courts argument because it was not presented to the trial court. I would point out that at the time the plea to the jurisdiction in this case was filed, and at the time the trial court signed the judgment in this case, the law of this jurisdiction was Menifee versus Medlin. In the Menifee versus Medlin, this court held, and I'm going to quote, given the language of subsection F, its plain meaning, a suit that could have been brought under this chapter against the governmental unit necessarily means a suit that falls within the Tort Claims Act limited waiver of sovereign immunity. So at the time the trial judge, and at the time Judge Evans in this case ruled on the plea to the jurisdiction, this court had said 101.106F only requires that the suit against the employee be dismissed if there was a waiver of immunity that would have allowed the plaintiff to go after the government. So that was the law at the time. The mandate in the Franca versus Velazquez case, which expressly overruled this court's decision in Menifee versus Medlin, the mandate in Franca versus Velazquez was not handed down until after the trial court signed the order in the present case. Therefore, Avonda Fox had no notice that she would need to make an open court's argument, because at the time that this judgment was signed, there was no need for an open court's argument, according to Menifee versus Medlin. So we respectfully ask that this court reverse the trial court and remand the case.
How do we get there? How do we get to where you want us to get, given the statute? We declare the statute unconstitutional?
I think the court should declare that the application of the statute in this case is unconstitutional. If the Supreme Court's interpretation of 101.106F is correct, then I think the statute is unconstitutional. The court in Franca versus Velazquez did not address the open, there was not an open court's argument made in that court. I didn't think the statute was unconstitutional until Franca came down. But when Franca comes down and you say, well, you, under Franca you can't sue the employee and under the statute you can't sue the government, I think that the Franca decision as applied to the statute makes the statute unconstitutional, because it closes the courthouse door to a plaintiff like Mrs. Fox.
But the law's pretty clear that we cannot consider unconstitutionality as applied unless it's raised below.
That's problematic in this case, I agree, but I would simply urge the court to apply it anyway, because in this case, because of the timing of Franca versus Velazquez, there was no need, there was no reason to make an open court's argument. I mean, at the time that the judge made his decision, Medlin versus Menifee was the law, and so, I mean, I'm just saying as a practical matter, Mrs. Fox had no reason to make an open court's argument. Therefore, we urge it now for the first time.
Do you have any authority for that?
No, ma'am.
Mr. Turner.
Yes, sir.
In your, will you throw it up? In the conclusion of prayer, all the way to the appellant's reply brief, there is included in the conclusion of prayer an alternative request. And that request is that this court remand the case to the trial court for consideration of the open court's provision in the Texas Constitution and how Section 101.106 would apply in light of the recent Supreme Court opinion. Now, wouldn't that cure any question that might come up later on, even if you got to the Supreme Court, about whether you had a pleading defect?
I think it would, Your Honor, and I apologize for not mentioning that. That's correct. That probably would be the preferred method of tackling this problem. The problem being Mrs. Fox had no reason or opportunity or notice to make an open court's argument. I think if this court would remand the case to the trial court, that would solve the problem of, well, although she technically, she wasn't able to present the argument, and that would give her the chance to present it. No, ma'am, I don't. I don't think there is authority to that effect. I think this is a real unusual set of circumstances because of the timing of the cases. So I don't, I'm unaware of any authority, but if the court wants me to brief it, I will.
So you want us not to rule and to remand. Isn't that an abatement?
I guess it could be considered an abatement, Your Honor. I'm not sure. I think that just remanding the case would allow Judge Evans the opportunity to consider those arguments. It wouldn't really be an abatement. It would be a remand.
Is that a reversal?
I think it would be a reversal. Reverse and remand would be what we would ask for.
Well, just hypothetically, if we can't figure out a vehicle to do what you want us to do, do you have any alternative requests?
I can't think of any other possibility other than this court to hold 101.106 violates the open courts provision when Franca versus Velasquez is applied to it. That would be one way. The only other way I can think of is, as Justice Meyer said, to remand the case for consideration by the trial court. With the statement that we didn't have any reason to raise it, yes, Your Honor, I think it would be a do-over in that sense, because basically the law changed, and it's the change in the law that gave rise to the open courts violation. I have to confess, we didn't do a search for cases where that happened, where there was a change in the law afterwards, but we'll be happy to do a letter brief if the court wishes. Yes, ma'am. Well, we will be, if the court will give us however much time it would like, we'll be happy to furnish the court with a letter brief on that issue.
Maybe we should hear from the appellate first.
Okay.
Before we
yes, sir.
Decision from the bench, all that.
Okay. Yes, sir.
And we thank you for your argument today.
Thank you.
You'll be entitled to close whenever you have to leave.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
May it please the court, counsel. Your Honor, there are three reasons to affirm the judgment below. First of all, the March 14, 2011 order was not decided under 101-106-F or any other provision of 101-106. The order actually signed by the trial judge, Judge Evans, was signed under standing. The second reason, and I'll go through each of these, the second reason to affirm is that the plaintiff Fox, even if you decided that this somehow implicated 101-106, she had the option, as expressed in the Franca opinion that counsel quoted, to opt out of 101-106 election by simply suing the individual employees. Instead, Ms. Fox sued both the state and the individual employees, which is what triggered the Tort Claims Act. The third reason to affirm is that the 101-106 argument is waived. The Franca court actually did address open courts, and in fact, the Franca court went further to say that it's a procedural decision. The statute is procedural, it is not substantive, and therefore it would apply to any case pending. There's no retroactivity argument in that sense.
Excuse me. That's all right.
So, may I proceed, Your Honor?
Sorry to interrupt you.
Thank you. Going to the first basis, the standing, the March 14, 2011 order found at page 280 in the record cites very clearly that the court grants the defendants the dismissal only as to the argument on standing. The court did not treat the 101-106 issue whatsoever. So if this court were to write something on 101-106, it would be dicta in terms of the facts of this case. There's no record below that supports that, and this, of course, ties into my third point about they failed to preserve it. Well, the reason they failed to preserve it was not an issue to begin with. So basically, though, the order is very clear. The notice of appeal filed in this case only lists the March 14, 2011 order. Had it tracked back to the second amended plea to the jurisdiction order at page 260 of the record, that order was under 101-106, but that related to the state entity, not to the individuals. And again, this appeal is tendered only on behalf of the individual defendants they're wanting to bring back to the trial court, and so our position on that is they've waived it. Standing was the only basis for this order by Judge Evans. The second point that I would make is that even if the court decided this is in fact a 101-106 order, which clearly it says it's not, the plaintiff in every case, as the Supreme Court said in Franca, has the option to opt out. And the way you opt out is you sue only the individual employees and not sue the state. Contrary to what counsel represented, there is no motion to dismiss under 101-106F in this lawsuit. You can go through the record, there is none. There is a plea to the jurisdiction filed under 101-106A and 101-106E. 101-106A says if you sue an agency, you cannot sue the employees. They did sue the agency. The original petition filed in this case names the agency, the Texas Department of Family and Protective Services. The City of Houston versus Espinosa case cited by counsel in his reply brief, 2011 Westlaw 4925990, states that when the petition is filed, that's when the 101-106 statute is triggered, not when you serve it, not when you do anything else to it, but when you file it. So at the moment he filed that petition, and at the moment he filed his amended petition, in which he sued Azura Johnson, both in her official capacity and in her individual capacity, he named the state in both petitions. Now, counsel will come up here and say, well, we only served the amended petition on the defendants. That's correct. But if the amended petition lists an individual defendant in their official capacity, both Franca versus Velasquez at page 382 and Texas A&M versus Kosilgu, 233 Southwest 3rd, 835, and at page 844, states when you sue an employee in their official capacity, it's the same as suing the state. For that reason, the third plea to the jurisdiction is addressed under 101-106A and 101-106E. 101-106E says if you sue the state and the employee, the state has the right to move to have the employees dismissed. And that's precisely what the third plea to the jurisdiction is. It is not a 101-106F plea to the jurisdiction. 101-106F is where you only sued the employee, and the employees, not the state, moves to dismiss the employee if he acted in his official capacity, and you have a 30-day window to bring in the state. And the Houston Court of Appeals, if you've been following that, the 1st and the 14th districts have different opinions about what happens when you bring this motion within 30 days. Do you trigger up 101-106A, which says you can't sue the state, or the 14th court says you can, in fact, sue the state because you've elected to sue the state under 101-106F. Your Honors, I submit that none of that argument is relevant to this case because, as I pointed out in my...
elected to sue the state by suing the employees in their official capacity?
Yes, ma'am.
If that's the election to sue the state?
Yes, ma'am. Correct. And not to mention that his original petition named the state. It named the department itself and the head of the department in his official capacity and the state itself. And then even in the first amended petition, there are numerous references to the state as a defendant, to the state agency, the Department of Protective and Family Services. So looking at the argument, if you did decide it was 101-106, which again I submit it's not, the Supreme Court in Franca said it still wouldn't violate open courts. And the Supreme Court in Franca did address open courts, contrary to counsel representation. At page 385 of that opinion, they speak directly to open courts. And what the Supreme Court says is that if you have the option of suing the state and the individual employee, if you sued the state under common law, it was 100% immune. I wish for those days with the Attorney General's office. But under the Tort Claims Act, there are now exceptions to the common law immunity for suing the state. And so what the Franca court held, and this court has also treated that issue, what the Franca court held is that there's basically a trade-off. If the plaintiff wants to do, as Plaintiff Fox did here, sue the state and the employees, in order to do that, you trigger up this 101-106A, 101-106E provisions by suing both. And that's what the Franca court held. They said because under common law you can't sue the state whatsoever, this trade-off is a fair trade-off and does not violate open courts. As a matter of fact, there are no opinions anywhere in the state of Texas holding that 101-106 violates open courts. Justice Medina cited in his dissent that there could be an issue that, you know, he could conceive of such a violation, but there are no majority opinions of any court that's ever held that. They're basically asking you to do something that no one in the state of Texas has ever done. The third point, which is more to the point here, is that they failed to raise it in the lower court. They failed to raise the open courts violation as an issue. The Southwestern Electric Power versus Grant case, Texas Supreme Court case, cited in our brief, says very clearly, even in a motion for summary judgment situation, if you're going to raise that this is an open courts violation, it has to be raised at the trial court level. The trial court has the opportunity at that point to decide on it. The trial court can rule on it. I submit to you, when you look at our third plea to the jurisdiction, you look at the judge's letters in this case, there was a huge amount of information flowing to and from the court, the trial court, Judge Evans, on this 101-106 issue. And so finally, when he made his final order, he basically punted and threw us over on the standing side, which, if you look at the pleas, is also majorly briefed by both sides. So basically, there was no reason to raise open courts because the trial court in the case below did not rule based on 101-106. So it would be inappropriate to reverse this case on a statute that was not applied to the facts of this case and certainly is not part of this March 14, 2011 order at page 280 of the record.
Let me ask your opinion about something. Randy's argued that because the opinion had not come down or mandate hadn't issued, it was unforeseeable. And there are bodies of law that say you have to keep up with what's before the Supreme Court, what's before the Fifth Circuit, and to see what they're considering because that affects whether something is foreseeable. What is your opinion of the degree to which a lawyer has to look forward and try to forecast what the hot issues are and what's going to be coming down, specifically as applied to this case?
Yes, right. And actually, that's an excellent question. I spent some time thinking about that this last week. Two responses. First of all, besides the Franca case, which, of course, was decided after this case got teed up, There's the Viasan case, which is cited in my brief, which was decided before this case. There was also the Heinz versus Lally case back in 2010 by the 14th Court in Houston. That's at 305 Southwest 3rd, 761, page 772, that all went through the same analysis that the Franca case did and said that it is not a violation of open court. So my first response is there are other cases out there that have already held the open courts does not apply. My second response is the Franca opinion itself addressed that issue. What Franca said was whenever a court makes a decision on a law, what could be a law change, the first issue, and they were analyzing the 101-106 statute in the opinion, what they said was you look to, is it a procedural change or a substantive change? And if the statute that's in question is making a procedural change, it cannot be held to be retroactive because the procedure is something that's dictated in this case by the legislature. And so what Franca said was only the state legislature can decide when and how and wherever if state immunity can be waived, because as we started out today, common law, there is no waiver of state immunity. So Franca opinion said it is a procedural change, the 101-106, and therefore it's not retroactive, and that's why all of the cases that were pending, the court overruled. That was the basis for that action by the Texas Supreme Court. So the test is, do you look at it as a substantive or a procedural change? If the statute is you have to do certain hoops in order to waive sovereign immunity, the Supreme Court said that's procedural, and so a lawyer basically is faced with that prospect that it could change, and you're just stuck with it. And there'd be no remand, there'd be no do-over, and the Supreme Court has basically said that already in the Franca opinion. So what he's asking you to do is contrary to what the Franca opinion analysis of 101-106, the statute in question. Do y'all have other questions?
What would be your feeling, Mr. Dean, about supplemental briefing allowed by the court?
I'm always happy to brief, Your Honor, any question that the court has. I have no problem with that. I think because of the standing issue, that's really controlling. If the opinion of this court is that the order appealed is the March 14th, 2011 order, and if the order reads as clearly as I say it does, if it's just a standing, there'd be no reason to remand because Judge Evans has already ruled on standing, and the appellants in this case have not appealed that, so that ruling is final, in my opinion.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for your argument.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The only rebuttal I would state, Your Honor, is that it's my understanding that the standing issue was one where the party, one of the parties, was inadvertently sued by my partner in her official capacity. I think that it says that in the style, but in the body of the brief, it's clear that she's being sued in her individual capacity. The open courts argument, I don't think the Franca versus Velasquez case specifically addressed a situation like this, where the government is absolutely immune, but the employee is also sued. That's all I have, Your Honor.
If the order is limited to standing, though, where does this come in? You want to suit for me?
Well, it was my understanding, Your Honor, that this case was dismissed based on 101.106. That was my understanding I admit this wasn't my case, but it was my understanding it was dismissed based on 101.106F, which says if the government could have been sued and you sued the employee has to be dismissed.
So if the only reason was standing, then we really don't address your issue.
Correct.
Mr. Turner, thank you for your argument today. We'll take up the matter of whether there should be a request for further briefing whenever we consider this case, and we'll let you all know that what the court's decision will be about that after today.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you both for your argument.